Happy Halloween, and welcome back to another episode of the Supermercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is the podcast, the spooky podcast, where we share and discuss the very best in video game music, sometimes on Halloween Day.
You know, Carl, is this the first Halloween where I haven't done the intro with some kind of creepy, spooky voice?
It is possible. Thank you for joining us, guys. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. We're both so excited today to once again be joined by our good friend, Mr. Tim Turry. Thanks so much for coming back on the show, Tim.
Hey, Carl and Will. Thanks for having me. I am so happy to be back. And well, Halloween's my favorite time of the year, and it seems like just a perfect time for a reunion.
It's a Halloween tradition we have here on the podcast. We got to keep it going. And honestly, guys, we're excited to be focusing on the Resident Evil series, but we would not be able to really do this today without Tim. Tim's going to kind of give us some interesting perspective that we don't have on this series. You know, we approach things from musician's point of view, composer's point of view, but sometimes what we forget is to actually approach things from a gamer's point of view. So today's going to be a lot of fun kind of gap about the series. And I will say that so many people, you know, after we posted it the other day that we're going to do this episode next week, so many people are just seem to be really excited about this, because this is a series that just resonates with tons of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's to me now, full disclosure, last time I think we talked, I was still at Game Informer there in Minnesota with you guys, and now I'm over in San Francisco at Capcom USA and working directly on the Resident Evil franchise. But that
insane.
It's bizarre and exciting, and I love it. But Resident Evil is my favorite franchise of all time. Like, it's my favorite video game series, and a lot of that comes from, you know, I don't want to, you know, dwell on it too long here, but, you know, I love video game music, and it's one of my favorite aspects of video games altogether, and Resident Evil is my favorite franchise. But what's interesting for me is that, you know, I don't sit at work and, like, jam out to Resident Evil music while, like, I would, like, you know, Mega Man or Sonic or something.
I think something would be wrong with you if you did, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's interesting to talk about with you guys, because I love your guys' insight to why the music makes us feel the way that we do, and I couldn't be more excited to dive into this stuff with you guys.
Well, let's do it. We got a lot of music to get through today. So what you guys heard playing in was a really spooky, fitting play-in track from the first Resident Evil game. That was a track called More Rooms. And the very first Resident Evil game came out in 1996, so it's 20 years now of Resident Evil, which is crazy. The composers we have for the original game are Makoto Tomozawa, Koichi Hiroki, and Masami Ueda. We're going to play one more piece of music from the first Resident Evil game. Let's take a listen to First Floor. You guys are listening to First Floor. This comes to us from the very first entry. This is Resident Evil. And already, you guys are definitely in for a change of pace from what we normally cover on this podcast. This is a very fitting episode for Halloween. A lot of spooky, a lot of dark music here. I'm sure for people that grew up playing the series, this is going to be a trip down memory lane, but it's not necessarily going to be one that's going to, I would think, make you smile. It might make you kind of have almost like, you know, bringing back some traumatization in a way.
Well, I mean, that's not the role here. You know, it's about the ambiance. It's about the atmosphere. One of the great things about video games is I think they're in some ways one of the most perfectly equipped mediums for horror, you know, because by putting you in control of the situation, you have this closeness between the characters that you almost can't in any other medium.
Sure.
And I think music is always going to play a huge role in games, but when the function of it is to convey this, you know, feeling of horror and this overall, you know, creepy atmosphere, there's so many techniques that composers can use. I mean, not just on like a musical level, you know, in terms of notes and rhythms, but on a production level, we're going to hear some really far out, you know, nasty stuff.
Oh, yeah.
On today's playlist, of just all kinds of different mixtures of found sounds and different ways of using the orchestra and production, and you know, composers get to be really clever in the horror genre.
Tim, if we can we talk a little bit about your experiences playing this first entry? Do you remember when you first played Resident Evil 1?
Oh man, like, I think you guys both hit the nail on the head where, you know, Will, you talked about being in control and how that informs how you feel when you're hearing this music, and this character's life is up to you. And then Carl, you nailed it by mentioning trauma, because like, I was I basically, in, you know, 96, I was 11, and I was I feel like I was traumatized into fandom of this. It was just like, I was just shocked and arrested by Resident Evil, because, you know, by the time this music's playing, you've been chased into the mansion by these zombie dogs. You've been split up from your group. You've controlled a little bit, but you've encountered a zombie that you had to rely on your partner, Barry, if you're playing as Jill Valentine, to help fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're alone, and this music's kicking in, and you're set to explore, and you're controlling, you're at the wheel, and you feel desperate and totally isolated. And this music, as sort of campy and cliche it is as far as horror music and like heavy strings go and synth, it's so fitting. And I felt just desperation. Like, that was the feeling. It's like, I need to turn off this console, but I can't force myself to do it.
Right. Yeah, and you know, speaking a little bit of some of these composers here, so a name that is so prolific in the series is a gentleman who worked on this first game. It's Masami Ueda, a wonderful Capcom composer that has worked on, you know, games the likes of Okami, which is such a different musical tone. He's also worked in the Devil May Cry series. Really talented. I would argue maybe the most talented out of this initial bunch of composers, and he's going to pop up all throughout this series. So, you know what, why don't we move on to the next game, since we have so many to cover, you know, 20 years of Resident Evil games. We're going to try to play as many as we possibly can today. We're going to leave out a few, and obviously we're not going to be able to play every good piece of music from the series, but we're going to try our best. Let's move on to Resident Evil 2. I spent a lot of time playing this game. I played this for the PC, and I played this mostly in middle school and early high school, and it scared the living crap out of me.
And I remember I wasn't allowed to watch, but I would still come in,
sneak
and,
your
I mean,
way
I don't
in.
Even know if yeah you probably shouldn't have
you
even
should,
been playing this
you
but.
Should there's no way you should have been watching.
That's
this
classic classic big brother little brother situation. I love it.
Yeah,
all
it's
right,
one of the best.
Let's
it's,
start off
yeah you're right Tim, a classic.
Let's start off playing a pretty intense piece of music. This is Escape from Laboratory from Resident Evil 2. You guys are listening to Escape from Laboratory from Resident Evil 2, and let's first name the composers. Again, we have Masami Ueda, who is very prolific in the series. We also have Shusako Uchiyama and Siyun Nishiaki. This is, for me, other than Resident Evil 4, which we'll get to later, one of my favorites in the series and probably the game that I maybe spent the most time playing. Let's talk a little bit about what is different about this game, this series, from other video games that you know, someone may have been playing in 1997, 1998.
Yeah, I feel like Resident Evil 2 for me was one of the perfect examples of an amazing sequel. It just took everything that made people love the original and ratcheted it up, both production value,
yeah,
the challenge. You know, you look at something like Sonic 2, I think is a great example of a sequel that, or Mega Man 2. This one just, it looked better, it played better,
yep,
and in this case, it sounded better. And I think compared to what other people were playing in 98 was these games, these survival horror games, which is a genre that Capcom created, were punishing. Like, they didn't hold your hand.
Yes.
You were left, again,
really
you
hard.
Were left on your own to basically survive. And sometimes you didn't have much direction, and if you ran out of ammo, that's tough. I hope you saved.
And sometimes you didn't have those goddamn ink ribbons.
Yeah, no kidding. They're precious. But, of course, this this music plays as the underground umbrella facility is about to explode, and sometimes mm-hmm. there's a siren blaring, and it became, after the first one, and, of course, the second one, the tradition was set, and that you always could basically expect to escape from some sort of facility that was under a self-destruct sequence.
It's almost like Metroid in mm-hmm. that sense, that cliche of escaping from a self-destructing facility.
It's a perfect cliche.
Because I was thinking a little bit about Metroid when I was listening through some of these tracks, because I mean, that's a series that I have a lot of love for, but people don't really think of Metroid as being something associated with survival horror. But really, when you think about the mood that's created in that game, it's not all that different. I mean, you are kind of, it's the same emotions for the character of isolation and in kind of an unknown environment where you don't really know what's going to happen
there
next.
Just needs to be a lot more blood and gore, though. Those are the only notes I have for Metroid. We need more blood and gore.
I couldn't agree more. You know,
well, maybe Rockstar can give that to
Will,
us.
Will, I'd never thought about that. That's a like Metroid and Resident Evil comparison is cool. I love both those series. I'd never thought about mm-hmm. that comparison. But one thing I'd be curious from your guys' perspective is, I feel like Resident Evil 2, like especially this kind of track with, it's a little bit more bombastic, and I feel like you see these motifs and or these themes and this style of music, especially this is one of the most action-packed moments from Resident Evil 2, but the series as it went through, you know, its 20-year history also got more action-packed. So I almost feel
like
this music started, this kind of theme, this intensity started ratcheting up with similar instrumentation in some cases throughout the rest of the series.
Oh, absolutely. And guys, we're going to hear that today. Yeah.
Almost foreshadowing to where the series continues. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, Tim, and I think, yeah, absolutely, as we continue throughout our episode, particularly, you know, with Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6.
We're going to hear that, for
sure. We're definitely going to hear more of that action-packed sound that you're describing.
Well, one of my favorite musical traditions in this game, and it goes beyond music, it's just as far as an emotional, powerful moment, is the safety and security you feel when you're saving the game. And the music plays a really big role in that. So let's play the first example of that contrast in that sense of safety. This is Secure Place, which is the save theme from Resident Evil 2. You guys are listening to Secure Place from Resident Evil 2, and it's so beautiful. It's so different, obviously, from the musical tone of the rest of the soundtrack, and that is a tradition that continues in the series. And, you know, the ways that they're able to provide that musical, that emotional contrast, is really powerful. I just remember just those sighs of relief that I would feel once I was finally, you know, in the save room. It's a very effective part of the game that kind of makes you wanting to keep play. Because if you had nothing but that intensity, nothing but that dread,
right.
it, for me, I would probably give up eventually. But to have these little moments of, you know, serenity is really important.
You know, often I feel what would happen is you'd be going room to room exploring unknown parts of the mansion, or in this case, the Raccoon Police Department, and you'd be dwindling. Your supply of bullets and health would be dwindling. Your character would be limping. And then each room, the music would change as you have these, you know, first-person door-loading sequences with build up this tension. And then as the next room sort of fades from black into view, you're also hearing the music around the same time. It all comes into focus, and you have to drink in the security cam view of the room. And then when you hear this... Mm-hmm. instead of whatever tense music is playing, you have this Pavlovian response where it's like, oh, it's going to be okay. I can make it a little further.
Right.
Out of any game series, I can't think of any other series that has that feeling time and time again.
I think that's so true. And again, gets back to the idea of what a great vehicle games are for giving you those feelings, those sensations. But to talk a little bit musically, I think what's kind of unique about this piece, I think in the context of a different game, a piece like this would give us entirely different emotions. I think it's that oftentimes with music in a horror film or a horror game, we're exploring the extremes of register. So whether it's, you know, really high strings, kind of shrill, or something very low and ominous. Mm-hmm. And so I think with this piece, you know, we're getting piano in kind of a middle high range and some strings. It's all very present and almost like a speaking or singing range, where I think it really stands out, and it feels so safe because what our ears have been trained to with all the horror is if it's piano, it's really low octave piano drones, or maybe these big, you know, note clusters and a low register, or with strings, it's really high eerie violins. And I think it's the in a case like this, it's something as simple as just moving us into a different register that immediately gives us that feeling of safety. I mean, not to mention just, you know, the music itself, the chords, having this feeling of like a sense of relief. You know, there's not really too much rhythmic structure to a piece like this. It's almost like exhaling, you know.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to play one more piece of music from Resident Evil 2 before we move on. Let's play a battle track. This is the first Malformation of G. You guys are listening to the first Malformation of G, which I believe is the battle theme against William Birkin. And I think we've played this track on the podcast before. You know, musically, we're going to hand it over to Tim in a second here, but musically speaking, this is a really nice change of pace. This feels like legit, like an orchestral film score battle theme. This could fit in a movie, you know, if you actually had real instruments. It's really good writing here. You know, the brass lines are great. The really kind of fast string lines are very exciting. They get your blood pumping for sure.
Well, there's a use of dynamics that's really effective. You know, I think that's sharp dynamic contrast can really be used for effect to make you feel eerie, or, you know, like something's not quite right. But again, it's about extremes. Before, we were talking about extremes in register, but now extremes in dynamic. You know, if you also notice, the strings have this, what almost sounds like some kind of like aleatoric passage, because it's just this kind of buzzing of like an ambiguous harmony. You know, it almost sounds like bees buzzing or something. Now, it definitely has this like ominous hum to
it. I'm assuming that the G they're talking about is the G virus.
Yeah, that's the G thing that they're talking about here. William Birkin injects himself with the G virus, which Umbrella is trying to take back from him as a last ditch to try to get revenge. And of course, he's mutating throughout the entire game. And he's an omnipresent threat and like a shifting threat throughout it as well.
Yep.
And so he's getting bigger and bigger. I think something that's really cool about this track is to my untrained ear, it's like part Jaws in there, but there's like theme from Jaws. But also there's these, like, it's punctuated with these horns, which like are almost triumphant, but also at the same time they give this indication
very heroic,
of but to me it also makes it feel like there's something bigger than me, like this is just there's something larger than me at stake here. And on top of that, finally, like, sometimes this track is really neat and orderly and everything's just kind of trucking along like it's a, you know, well-oiled machine, and then there's these like punctuations of chaos in it, and
sure.
I feel like that reminds me of Battling Birkin, where sometimes you feel like you're in control, you're landing shots, avoiding getting hit, and sometimes it just falls apart and he stabs you through the gut.
There's something a little bit off about it.
Well, Carl mentioned that it sounds kind of like film music, and I think one of the reasons it does is touching a little bit on what you were talking about, Tim, which is essentially that there's different ideas joined together. You know, that low jump, bump, 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 that kind of sounds like Jaws, but it's kind of a different meter. That has this one ever-present character of, you know, threat and intimidation. You have the strings, but that horn color, it's almost like a different character theme. It's this heroic ba-dum, ba-dum.
Yeah.
And it's the combination of all those elements together in a small musical space. That, to me, feels like film music, where you have, you know, in the span of 30 seconds, you might have a snippet of this character's theme and then this swell of action music, and it's all kind of melded together. We don't often get a flurrying effect of themes like that in video games too often, but I think this is a good example of it, and it's really great to hear your perspective, Tim, about how all that stuff, how it makes you feel in context of the game.
Yeah, I think it's a very fitting piece of music. They did an awesome job scoring this battle. All right, let's move on to the next game in the series. This is Resident Evil 3 Nemesis. Now, I spent some time with this game. I didn't play this nearly as much as Resident Evil 2, but we're going to just play one piece of music today, and this is another save theme, okay? So we're going to get another glimpse into that serenity that you feel in this game. This is Free From Fear, and it was composed by, once again, Masami Ueda, as well as Saori Maeda. Let's take a listen. You guys are listening to Free From Fear. This is from Resident Evil 3, and it's kind of building upon some of the themes that we heard in Secure Place, and really even building upon some of the themes, the ideas that I heard in the Resident Evil 1 save theme. A lot of continuity with the Resident Evil save themes. I just think it's nice to provide contrast in this playlist because, you know, obviously there's going to be plenty of spooky, you know, creepy music today. But I'm really happy that we have tracks like this to kind of, even in this, listening to this podcast, you know, that it's not going to be all just dread the whole hour.
Right. Well, what's interesting, there's almost this overarching sense of dread to these tracks, but it's
tragedy
a way of,
for sure.
It feels tragedy is exactly right. There's like a tragic element to it that even though you're safe, it's definitely not happy by any means. I think there's a sense of tranquility to it. But it is interesting how similar they all are. They all have this like piano delay sound with a lot of reverb. It's all kind of this rubato out of time thing with piano and strings. This one to me, I thought was interestingly different from the last one because it has that low droning bass note.
Sure.
But that to me conveys the sense of tragedy a little bit more in this piece than the one that we heard from RE2. And I think that's really effective for the game because even though you're safe, you know, you're not, you know, you're going to be going out soon and having to deal with all of these horrible monsters and enemies and horror.
One of the easiest ways to evoke tragedy, you know, that type of emotion, is to play something on piano with a lot of delay. Anytime you do that, it's going to be tragic.
Definitely a lot of the Japanese composers seem to use that as kind of like a paintbrush.
This one's interesting to me. Like, Carly mentioned continuity before, which I think between 2 and 3, Resident Evil 2 and 3, like, that's an important theme because Jill actually goes back to the Raccoon Police Department, which I think is why, you know, this kind of nod to the piano save room music is interesting. And I also think that, you know, Sanctuary is important in all Resident Evil games, but in 3, they introduced Nemesis, who was the first monster that would like aggressively and persistently chase you from room to room. And again, when you heard this music, it was your only guarantee that you weren't going to be chased by this crazy, unstoppable juggernaut boss that was literally pursuing you throughout the entire game. So I feel like that relief that you heard when you heard this was more potent than it had been in the last two.
Absolutely. Well, guys, let's move on to really the fourth entry in the series. This is Resident Evil Code Veronica. It was originally released on the Dreamcast in 2000. This is a really good game. Let's take a listen to one piece of music from this soundtrack. We have a track we're going to play today is The Palace of the Insane. Let's take a listen. You guys are listening to The Palace of the Insane, a fitting title for this track. And insanity definitely is a theme that has a role in this game, Code Veronica. Originally released for the Dreamcast, interesting is we have some new composers we haven't really heard from today. We have Takeshi Miura, Hijiri Anze, as well as Sane Kashara. So yeah, Palace of the Insane. Tim, what was your experience with, did you ever play much of Code Veronica?
Yeah, you know, Code Veronica, for me, at the time, I was a tremendous Sonic fan, but also a huge Resident Evil fan, and Code Veronica is the reason I had a Dreamcast back in 2000. And I adored this game. If I'm placing it correctly, I mean, it takes place on a prison island, so some of it's, like, very utilitarian factory kind of military complex, but there are these pockets of that sort of ornate palaces that are these really elaborate residences that evoke more strongly the original classic Resident Evils, the first three or so, and this one feels so classic in that
it definitely
does. The first game actually it reminds me of.
Well, you know what? We're gonna keep trucking along here. You know, one of the things that we're gonna cover today is there's a lot of spin-off games that happened around this time. One such game is a game. I think the first game was Resident Evil Survivor, which I think was for PS1. We're gonna play. We skipped that today, and we're gonna play a track from Resident Evil Survivor 2. And this is actually like a light gun shooter game. So Resident Evil Survivor 2.
Absolutely.
Let's take a listen to Stage 4, composed by Mikado Iida. Definitely different from the normal Resident Evil sound. You guys are listening to Stage 4 from Resident Evil Survivor 2. This is composed by Mikado Iida, which is a name we haven't heard before. Not really a name that continues really in the series. Makes sense. It's a spin-off game. It's a totally different genre. Yeah, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you guys think this fits the genre of a light shooter?
Well, I mean, this is action music, and it's very busy, and there's kind of a flurry of notes, and I mean, the biggest difference to me is that there's that constant, you know, marching snare drum that just would have no place anywhere in the rest of this series.
It's good music, though.
Yeah, we talked about how that, like, escape from the laboratory was kind of like a foreshadowing to the action music that would happen later in the Resident Evil series, but I can't think of anything in the rest of the games that's this sort of on the nose in terms of just being kind of this earnest, intense action music. None of the creepiness from the rest of the series is really retained. You know, you could imagine this being for a myriad of different action or fighting or battle games.
Tim, did you ever have any time with the light rail shooter Resident Evil games?
So my experience with Survivor is with the original that came out on PlayStation 1, which was supposed to be a light gun game, but that ended up getting nixed from it. And then there's Dead Aim, which is a PlayStation 2 light gun shooter.
Yep.
Survivor 2 is themed, so it's basically a retelling of Code Veronica's story. It was made in arcades, and yeah, it was a co-op light gun game.
Yep.
It never came out in America, so some people might not be as familiar with it, but
sure.
I think that at this point in the franchise's history, I mean, this was about as action-packed as Resident Evil got, which I think it does a good job of conveying, you know, the mood of Code Veronica with some of similar, like, instrumentation. But obviously the pace is going to be way different. You're shooting, you're being, in, you know, surrounded by all sides, and you have to really keep up the pace.
Absolutely. Well, guys, let's move on to a huge entry in the series. This was a big deal. This introduced the series to a lot of new gamers. I'm talking about the remake. Resident Evil came out originally for the GameCube, and this was a ridiculously gorgeous game for the GameCube. You know, one of the first games released for the system, and probably still really the best looking game I can think of for the GameCube. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Let's talk about the composers we have for this remake here. We're going to play one piece of music that has kind of an interesting story to it. We have Shusaku Uchiyama, Makoto Tomozawa, which is a name that has worked in the series before, as well as Masao Senboji.
Well, and Carl, you're forgetting, you know, one of the most important composers, Ludwig von Beethoven.
Yes, exactly. So the piece of music,
little-known Austrian composer.
So what we're going to play today is Moonlight Sonata. Tim, why don't you set the stage for this track?
This one requires a little bit of a setup. Yeah, so Carl, that was an awesome intro for Remake, which I think is still, to me, I came to this conclusion at Game Informer before I was a biased Capcom employee, but I think Resident Evil Remake is the best horror game that's ever been made. And for a leap in graphical quality from one generation to the next, this was a remake of a PlayStation 1 game. The GameCube was the next generation.
Yep.
So it was just one leap, and it was tremendous. And it helped sell the mood and the atmosphere of Resident Evil that much more. I feel like a lot of the music, the the main soundtrack is really evocative of a lot of the things that we've been listening to and examining so far, but the Moonlight Sonata plays an important part in solving a puzzle in Resident Evil 1 where
right.
you need to appropriately play the track. If you're Jill Valentine, she has a little bit easier time playing through Moonlight Sonata to on a piano to open a passageway. Chris Redfield's tone deaf. He tries to play the sheet music, and he fails miserably. But his partner, Rebecca Chambers, comes in, tries to give it a shot. She's a little rusty. You give her time to it to practice. Come back later.
Yeah.
You can hear from a hallway over that she sounds much better.
That's
Enter
awesome.
The room, and, well, we'll hear the iterations here.
Yeah, so we're going to play just a little bit of the first version when she's kind of messing up and remembering it, and then we're going to play the well-performed version. Let's take a listen to Moonlight Sonata from Resident Evil.
What was that?
There you go. Now she's got it. You guys are listening to Moonlight Sonata from Resident Evil Remake. Originally came out for the GameCube. A really big deal.
Awaken the music teacher in you. What was Mrs. Chambers doing wrong there? What was she not quite on?
There was so much of it that was wrong that it really feels to me like it was clearly, like, almost comedically wrong. Like, I can't imagine someone actually playing it that wrong.
The one gripe I would have about this is that it doesn't really sound like someone who's playing a piece incorrectly, because the type of notes that they're changing,
completely different
notes, they
don't
feel like things that would be mistakes. It kind of just sounds like occasionally a note will be like a whole step higher, but then the left hand is just playing these like really dissonant, like I think it's effective sound wise of creating like a more dissonant version of Moonlight Sonata that sounds unpracticed.
I think Rebecca is just full of BS. I think she could have played it to begin with. That's what I think.
She was holding out. She just wanted to spend more time with Chris. That's what's going on.
Yeah, she's just being dramatic, I think.
Yeah.
No, but it's crazy. I don't know if it was last week or a couple weeks ago that we had that arrangement
Tchaikovsky
of Swan
piece.
Lake by Tchaikovsky. This
yeah.
is becoming like a video game classical music podcast.
It's
where
crazy.
We're doing, you know, versions of existing pieces of classical music. But do we have to credit Beethoven?
Yeah, Tim, we recently had an episode where we played a track from the Genesis game McDonald Land, and there's just this
okay.
random stage where they, you know, do Swan Lake.
That's awesome. Of course they do.
Of course, why not? So another game that came out for the GameCube, which was incredible. I remember borrowing this game from my friend Josh in high school a long time ago. I didn't own it, but I had a GameCube, so I borrowed this game, Resident Evil Zero. A composer we haven't heard from today, Saiko Kobuchi. Let's take a listen to Zero. This is super beautiful. You guys are listening to, or you just listened to, Zero from Resident Evil Zero, composed by Saiko Kobuchi. And man, this is beautiful. Yeah, it feels like we're...
What perfect music for Halloween.
It feels like we are kind of reaching like the next level, maybe musically, of the series. You know, kind of pushing the boundaries production-wise, sound-wise. This sounds worlds better. I mean, this makes the original Resident Evil sound like it was on like the Super Nintendo compared to this.
Well, yeah, there's no substituting the real thing.
Yeah, it's so emotional, and for me, like, so Resident Evil Zero is a prequel. This takes place, this is the story, we mentioned Rebecca Chambers, before she gets to the mansion of Resident Evil 1, this is her story set before Resident Evil 1. And so this was sort of a nostalgic return to the, you know, the Raccoon City, or the Raccoon Forest, and it felt like going back in time to, yeah, you know, hear a story that was just lost to time, and it feels appropriately nostalgic and kind of forlorn that way, because you know it's doomed. Like, you know, anything that comes out of this, it's going to end bad. So it felt kind of like a doomed intro to the game.
Yeah, it's a wonderful game. Guys, we're going to move on to another spin-off game. And what's interesting about the music of this game is it kind of has an 80s vibe to it. This is Resident Evil Dead Aim. And I think it's perfectly fitting. You know, again, the genre is completely different, so it doesn't really necessitate the same type of music that the mainline series has. So kind of a fun change of pace here. Just one track from Resident Evil Dead Aim. Let's take a listen to the introduction. You guys are listening to the introduction from Resident Evil Dead Aim, and Tim was saying while we were listening to this, kind of sounds like Castlevania. It really does. Interesting.
Yeah,
it's kind of funky. It's a little cheesy, you know, with that fretless bass is not very subtle. The composer here is Nobuyoshi Sano. Cool, though. Cool stuff.
It's really interesting. When I think back to my memories with Dead Aim, which are really good memories, I think it was a really underrated gem on the PS2. It was a light gun game, but you use this light gun controller that had a D-pad on the back.
Right.
So you would run around in third person with the D-pad, and then when you went to go fight zombies, you could aim and shoot in first person and dial in headshots and stuff. I thought it was brilliant, but this track does not register with any of my memories of the game. You know,
sure.
It's really kind of lighthearted and unlike anything else from the series that I recall.
Absolutely.
So, Tim, I'm really curious. You're obviously, a bit of a Resident Evil expert, and, you know, you grew up playing and loving these games. It must be such a great thrill for you now to get to work for Capcom and get to work directly on, you know, the Resident Evil series. What's that whole experience been like for you? And it kind of marks, I guess, an interesting turning point in gaming and the development of games, that you have people working at these companies who actually grew up playing these games.
Yeah, it's been really surreal, and I'm really fortunate to have the opportunity to, you know, work on the I work with an awesome, super talented team at Capcom USA, helping support all the cool things that, you know, Capcom Japan is doing over in the lab in Osaka. And it's a perfect timing for me, because this year was the 20th anniversary of Resident Evil, as we talked about. Mm-hmm. But also, it's all ramping up to Resident Evil 7, which is, you know, the new direction for the franchise, which is super. So it's perfect. It's a perfect blend of, like, nostalgia and, like, what the future holds for the series, which is...
Yeah.
Which is great, but it's surreal. That's the best way I can put it. It's just been, there's been so many moments where I have to kind of zoom out and remind myself that, like, oh, this is my job. I'm, you know,
it's
one
insane.
Moment, you know, playing a game that's not out yet, or the next moment I'm, you know, helping design like a Resident Evil escape room experience.
Well, and also it makes all those memories you have as a kid playing video games, you know, those were just,
you were just
homework,
preparing for your job.
You know?
That's all you were
preparing
doing.
For your job.
You guys are right.
Well, guys, we're going to play one more spin-off game before we get back to the mainline series. Fear not, we're going to get back. Some of my favorite stuff has yet to come. So let's play a track from Resident Evil Outbreak. This is the main title theme. I think this is very beautiful. Let's take a listen to this from Resident Evil Outbreak. What a beautiful piece of music. You guys are listening to the main title from Resident Evil Outbreak, and we have this composed by Akihiko Matsumoto. Yeah, Will, what do you think about this?
Man, this is so gorgeous. This really has the feeling of kind of golden era film music, and there's those elements to it, the kind of chromatic leading tones that make it feel just spooky enough. But yeah, absolutely beautiful. This is so far my favorite piece of the day by far.
Not gonna lie, some similarities to the Max Payne theme, but that's okay. That's okay, folks.
And you know what, Carl, I haven't heard it that way, but I adore the Max Payne theme, and maybe that's one of the reasons I loved this track so much.
Yeah.
So this track was set to, I don't know if you've seen the intro to Resident Evil Outbreak, but it's this like really stunning slow motion, gorgeous CG recreation of the T-virus basically getting loose in the sewers beneath Raccoon City.
Oh my gosh.
As the umbrella, you know, corporation soldiers fail in their job and Birkin goes loose. It's really stylish, and
yeah,
it's so cinematic, and this track fit it perfectly. I would stop and show all my friends, whether they cared about Resident Evil or not, I would show them this intro, partially because of this song.
These chords are so excellent, and this is just one of the best melodies, by far the best melody we've heard today. It's lovely.
And this comes from an unlikely source.
Tim, I was curious, this is completely outside of the music, but something I've always wondered about this series is that I've always heard, you know, like the Japanese title is Biohazard, or maybe that's what it's called in like Europe or something, but it's called Resident Evil here, and Resident Evil as a title has never made sense to me. But Biohazard, like, that sounds like that'd be a great video game title. Why isn't the series just called Biohazard?
Yeah, it's something that I had wondered myself as a fan, and being aware of the word Biohazard as a title, you were correct, that's the Japanese title for Resident Evil over in Japan. And Biohazard made so much sense. It's punchy, it's really kind of exciting, it makes sense with the viral nature of all the games. But I think, you know, back in 96, it was relating to some, you know, I think that someone else had rights to the name at the time of Biohazard. So, you know, to get it out in the other regions, some creativity had to come into play. And I get the criticism of Resident Evil as a title. I think for me, it started approaching a double meaning where, you know, in a lot of these cases, it's a singular setting, whether it's a mansion or like a police department. Additionally, I guess I always felt of it as sort of a virus and host type situation, you know, like the evil of these viruses is a resident in basically the hosts, the zombie dogs, the zombies themselves.
Okay, now you're winning me over, Tim. I think I needed you there when I was a kid to explain that to me.
Only a Capcom employee could have explained it like that.
Yeah, thanks for...
No, I really like that, though, because the thing about it, it's a mouthful. But the thing is, it hasn't hindered the success of this series, so it's kind of cool that there's a franchise that's this big and this well-known with kind of an artistic title like that. You know, it's a little bit like avant-garde. It sounds like a, you know, a foreign student film, Resident Evil.
I don't know, Will, maybe I'm weird. I actually prefer Resident Evil to Biohazard. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, I have a different taste. I prefer it.
Biohazard sounds like big AAA punchy modern title, but yeah, Resident Evil is very mysterious and artistic.
Resident Evil, maybe it's just I'm so used to it, but Resident Evil feels like it fits the tone of what the games are better to me.
I think you both have great points. I like it. It wouldn't be a great, you know, Mercado Bros podcast unless you guys had like super well thought out but conflicting opinions about things. So I like it.
Well, guys, I'm really excited to finally move back not only to the mainline series but to my favorite by far entry in the series. We're talking about Resident Evil 4 here, folks.
This has to be everyone's favorite.
Wow, I'll never forget the first time I played this game. It was around Halloween, and it was really late at night, and I had all the lights out, and I was freaked out, but I could not put the controller down.
Perfect.
We're gonna play a lot of music from Resident Evil 4 because I think it's my favorite soundtrack as well as game personally. So, all right, let's start off with one of the first things you hear in the game. The opening cutscene music really sets the stage. This is the Drive First Contact, and the composers we have for this game, a composer that worked on the remake as well is Masao Senboni, and we also have Shusaku Uchiyama. Let's take a listen to The Drive. You guys were listening to The Drive First Contact from Resident Evil 4, and, you know, how perfectly fitting is this? You know, the game itself couldn't have been a bigger departure and a change of pace for the series. So, you know, immediately, as soon as you start this game, the music, this, we've never heard anything like this in the series. The setting is different. You're about to play a game that feels so different from what you're used to in the series, but it has this awesome balance of, you know, retaining the essence of Resident Evil, and so much of it was invented in this game and kind of changed up, and that's what made it feel so exciting to me.
Well, what I think is so great about Resident Evil 4 is, you know, I've heard some criticism of it that it's less survival horror and a little bit more action.
Sure.
Because
it
totally
ditches
the fixed camera angle. But I still think there's enough limitations in the mechanics that it retains that same feeling of, you know, it's not effortless and fun to control these characters. It's still pretty terrifying and clunky in a good way.
I guess for me as a gamer, as a player, you know, at least up until that point, I thought it was a perfect balance because I still felt the dread. I still felt, you know, the fear and just kind of the tense.
Because you can't move while you have your gun
but
out.
But I thought it was a good balance because I did feel a little bit more empowered from the engine and the gameplay style. So for me, it was a perfect idea.
Yeah, you know, I think Resident Evil 4 is one of those perfect examples of a game in a well-known series, but a game that sort of transcended whether or not you were a pre-existing Resident Evil fan, and everyone found something that they loved in Resident Evil 4, and I think that's why it's still held up as being one of the best and most influential games of all time. Definitely one of my favorite games of all time. And it was still intense without being, like, horrifying all the time. You were still being, you know, out, having to manage crowds of insane ganados. And it was, it, what it lacked in isolation and in, you know, dread, it made up for intensity.
Well, this is also another thing that I love about this game, why it's meaningful to me, is out of any game for the GameCube, this was one that I felt the proudest of to be a GameCube owner.
Yeah.
Because this was one that was, this is not a child-friendly game. This is an intense, legit, like, hardcore gamer-type game. So I remember my friend Joe at the time, he used to kind of make fun of the GameCube and say, I have no reason to buy it. I'm good with my PS2. But originally, when this came out, before, you know, the other versions of it came out, he actually bought a GameCube for this game. And I remember thinking that was really cool, that he was so, like, enamored by this game that he actually bought the system just for it.
Well, there's so many wonderful aspects about it. I mean, there's really good characters. The graphics at the time were, like, the best ever. The game has a really nice flow and sort of a seamless story to it. And I guess to me, maybe because I hadn't played the other games as much and I have a not as good of a stomach when it comes to horror, this game was plenty terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. The chainsaws.
The thing is, it's not so much about like being always in like really creepy environments, but it's that feeling of like, oh my God, I can't do it. There's too many things happening. And it felt more realistic because of the way that you were able to control the character. So for me, it was almost more frightening because of, especially at the time, how realistic everything was about it.
Oh gosh, I can't even explain my hatred of Salazar. I've never wanted to choke or punch somebody more in my life. All right, guys, we're gonna now move on to maybe one of the spookiest tracks of the day. This is Bitores Mendez. Guys, happy Halloween. This is the perfect music for Halloween. One of the early bosses in the game, you guys will definitely remember what he looks like. This is the bald dude with the really long beard. So creepy. I was so scared when I had to fight this guy.
Yeah, of course. It's close quarters. You're in a burning barn as he turns into this weird, like, centipede creature. And, like, I'm hearing, yeah, like, the strings in it, too, which are like a skin-crawling kind of quality, and it seems super fitting.
I know. Oh, gosh. Yeah, this is on the nose.
This game is so terrifying. And, this character, he's really sort of one of the first, you know, big bads that you have to face off in this game, and it's one of the things I so love about it. And I love when games do this, where they make you feel like it's going to be a smaller experience than it ends up being.
Yeah.
Because for the whole first chunk of this game, he's sort of set up as almost like he's the main villain, because that's kind of like all you're introduced to so far at this point.
Right.
He was
and
a
then
face.
You just realize, oh yeah, it's just one step on this much larger journey. And I think particularly with games where it's challenging and it takes you a long time at the outset, that's a really wonderful design technique, because it makes you feel like, wow, I've really accomplished something. But then once you're just starting to finally get good, like, oh my gosh, no, I've really just taken my first step.
Well, we gotta keep rolling here, guys. I couldn't be more excited to move on to this week's track of the week. And we talked about this before, and there's no better example of this emotional effect than this track. This is the save theme from Resident Evil 4. I think musically it's my favorite, it's my favorite thing of the series. I think it's incredibly beautiful, but for me, it's so powerful and meaningful as far as
in context,
the emotions that it gives me when I would hear this piece of music. You know, just that respite from the dread, that respite from the darkness and the action. It's so powerful and it's so potent. Let's take a listen to the save theme from Resident Evil 4. It's incredibly simple, it's incredibly short, but I spent a long time listening to this piece of music. It never got old. It was always a welcome respite. This is so beautiful. One of my favorite themes on the GameCube. Composers we have here, really talented composers, Masao Senboni and Shusaku Uchiyama. I love the save theme. Actually, my good friend Elliot, who's the bass player of the Soul Surgeons, the funk band that I play in, he actually, a long time ago, I remember, played me like a solo bass arrangement he made of this theme. Like, he played all the parts on his bass.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a huge fan of this, so shout out to Elliot.
That's awesome, yeah.
And what's so great about this theme, it kind of has some of the musical things we were talking about before. In this case, it's not a piano, it's a harp, but it's still kind of, you know, that stringed, plucked percussion string instrument and, you know, these soft string pads. It gives you that same sort of feeling, but yeah, this is so incredibly beautiful. One thing that's really effective, though, in conveying that slight, like we talked about, dread or uncertainty underneath it all, here is done with this little metric thing. The whole piece, you kind of feel it in one, but it's in three. One, two, three, 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 four. There's this one bar of four where you essentially get one beat longer than you're expecting. And so you never feel
it's unexpected.
Like you can sink into any kind of groove or comfort. And I think that's indicative of what the emotion is meant
to
be.
Well, I think that's such an amazing point to make. Because I guess what I will say is, although you feel safe, you know that it's not going to last. You know that eventually you have to leave. You have to go through that door and continue. So I think that's just a perfect way to do
it. Well, you know, you're always looking over your shoulder. You know, you might feel safe, but you're never quite sure. And that one bar of a changed meter kind of implies that to me.
Well, let's move on to a piece that is just etched in my memory. I feel like I have heard this so many times. Maybe this section of the game I died a lot. I'm not sure what's going on, but let's take a listen to Infiltration from Resident Evil 4. You guys are listening to Infiltration from Resident Evil 4. And yeah, I feel like for all three of us, this is a track that maybe one of the tracks we've heard the most in this game. We've heard this so many times.
In my mind, I hear cultists yelling at me in Spanish. Like, that's what fills in the gaps.
But that's just a normal day for you. You just hear that a lot.
Oh, I told you that in confidence, Carl. And here you are broadcasting it to the thousands and thousands of amazing Mercado Bros fans. But this is...
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the context of this.
This is... I think you mentioned it during the break, but just... I feel like this is when you're exploring environments and you've perhaps alerted some enemies and they're starting to you know, impede on you, but it's this is what I like about Resident Evil 4 soundtrack, is that the action is so intense and so in your face and so frantic, and they're yelling at you, and so much is going on at any point that the music doesn't need to do too much at any given point to ratchet up the intensity.
Oh, that's such a great point.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it needs that mechanism. It's the thing, like, action music is, that's why so many times it's ostinato-based, but it's almost this mechanical thing underneath it, where I think a lot of times with horror game music, it's about all of these tiny moments of frightening you, or if it is creating a mood, it's creating a pad. But with more action-oriented things, it's about creating this little repeating device. And to me, it's very simple, but with this, it's that which it, just to focus in on that one little percussion element, to me, I don't know why, but it's such a gross sound. It almost sounds like saliva swishing in a mouth or something. Like, it's very kind of a gross sound, and I think it's very fitting for this game because, you know, it deals with you know, viruses and parasites and, you know, all these kind of macabre and gross, you know, subjects.
Gross, squishy stuff.
I think the way they got that sound, that swishy sound, was actually through the phase. I think they had like an envelope and they were just kind of moving through the phase, and that's what gave that kind of like a, almost like similar to like a wah pedal in a way.
Sure.
But yeah,
it just, yeah,
really
it has
awesome.
This
all right.
Vocal quality to it.
We're going to play one final piece of music from Resident Evil 4. You can't not play the ending theme, right? It's so beautiful. And really captures the exact emotion I had when I beat this game. A little bit of, obviously, like, you know, you're catching your breath and you're glad it's over, but also a little bit of sadness that it's kind of over in a way. Some melancholy, just kind of a bittersweet ending. Let's take a listen to Sorrow from Resident Evil 4. You guys are listening to Sorrow from Resident Evil 4, and this just perfectly sums it up for me. Like, it was exactly the type of music that I needed to hear at this moment. And I remember putting down the controller and just, I just had a mix
you
of
just
emotions.
Applauded.
Because
you stood up and clapped your hands.
It took me a while to beat the game, and it felt like it was quite a journey, and I was glad that it was over, but I was also like totally game for having it be twice the length, and I kind of wanted it to keep going.
Hell yeah, that's what the new game plus is for. Another part of why I loved this credits music is it was bittersweet, like you were mentioning, but it starts off with this almost like fairy tale vibe, because it's telling the story of how this village, all these people went from villagers to being, you know, swayed by the charismatic Saddler and then infected with these brainwashing, mind controlling parasites. And then you just like learn this sad backstory of all these hundreds of people that you just had to mow down to save the president's daughter. And it's like tragic. fades from fairy tale to really tragic and like, it's like, oh god,
well,
what
it's
have
also
I done?
This interesting commentary on like America and like our values, that it's like kill hundreds of these, you know,
the president's
poor
daughters.
Innocent people just to save this one like white girl.
But I will say I was on board for it. I was like, hell yeah, I'm gonna save the president's daughter. Like, it worked for me.
Hell yeah.
The plot totally made sense to me.
Well, and the fact that you get the parasite too is kind of like this.
Oh, gosh. Oh, the game is amazing. All right, we got to move on. We're going to move on to Resident Evil 5. I played this game a lot, too. I had a good time with this game. Played it for the Xbox 360. For me, it was... It did feel like I got some kind of... It scratched some similar itches that I had from Resident Evil 4. Obviously, quite a different tone. The composers we have for Resident Evil 5 are Koda Suzuki, Akihiko Narita, and Wataru Hokiyama. Very talented composers. Let's play Wesker theme. This is Winds of Madness from Resident Evil 5. You guys are listening to Wesker Theme. This is Winds of Madness from Resident Evil 5. And wow, we've come a long way from, you know, the general MIDI sounds of Resident Evil. You know, we alluded to this, but the intensity keeps getting amped up and we're getting, you know, fully like orchestral music that, again, this could totally fit into film. This, you wouldn't even need to change anything. This is ready for a film right now.
Yeah. Well, what's cool about this is totally fitting for like a horror movie score. And what's great about horror films is they don't succumb to the same cliches that a lot of modern action movie scores do. And in that sense, they're more orchestrally sophisticated or interesting. You know, they don't kind of, they're not so concerned with these like badass, you know, drum loops and kind of string ostinatos. So something like this, yeah, it just surprised me, sort of the intricacies of the brass and woodwind writing, because it's definitely not something we get a lot in video game music. And this is something that I guess I just taken for granted. I forgot how excellent this music is.
And this moment in the game is 100% deserving of that bombast and like production that you're mentioning.
It's
because
so epic.
Because one, you know, Resident Evil 5, we talked about it a little bit before, but I think one of the best co-op games that's ever been made. I had a blast playing it. And in the fact that it's so action-packed is also the climax of your time chasing down Wesker on and off throughout the entire series. And so here you have the main villain of the entire franchise, and you're facing off in the bowels of an active volcano after his plane crashes there, and facing off with him and the lead up to that fight. So it just feels unhinged in that perfect way where Wesker's on edge.
Yes.
This is his last breath, his last gasp, basically, and it feels perfect.
Yeah, Will and I had a lot of fun playing co-op in this game. A lot of good times, for sure.
Well, and here, another fantastic melody. I mean, I know that's not something that's necessarily always the goal for a lot of the music in this genre.
No.
In this survival horror genre. But this series is responsible for some incredible video game music melodies. I mean, both with the music that we heard and Resident Evil Zero and that title theme from Outbreak and now this, and I mean so many more, but this is just indicative of that. You know, it can still scratch the itch of that really satisfying, you know, melodic need that I know that Carl and I definitely have.
Well, guys, we're going to move on to Resident Evil 6, which came out a few years ago. And one of my favorite things that was established in Resident Evil 4 is the Mercenaries mode, which is so fun. And we're going to play the Mercenaries theme from Resident Evil 6. This is composed by Akihiko Narita. Let's take a listen. And by the way, just a little warning, this is like dance music here. It's a lot different genre-wise from anything we've heard. So get ready to dance to this Mercenaries theme. You guys are listening to the Mercenaries theme from Resident Evil 6, and we had a wonderful time. One thing I'm going to ask Tim to do here to kind of introduce our playout track is something that's going to, you know, get us excited as we anticipate the release of Resident Evil 7. So, Tim, you know, we can talk a little bit about 7, but also in general the series. You know, as a fan of the series, but now you and your fellow employees at Capcom, what does the release of Resident Evil 7 really mean to you guys?
It's, again, in hand with, like, this 20th anniversary being a celebration of all things Resident Evil. This podcast is basically like a perfect microcosm of what the past year has been like for me and all the fun it's been. You know, we just ramped up from 4, 5, and 6 here, which Like, those, we've been basically re-examining the entire series and celebrating it. And in part, you know, we re-released Resident Evil 4, 5, and 6 on, you know, PS4, Xbox One. So we were talking about all the good memories with RE4, which is puts us in a perfect position to kind of examine the past. And then we started the podcast by talking about this eerie, isolated mansion and how you're desperate and alone and against the odds. And Resident Evil 7 is... again, this full circle, you know, the full title will, you kind of set this up too, is it's Resident Evil 7 Biohazard. And in Japan, it's Biohazard 7, The Resident Evil. So it's a big shift for the series. It's more photoreal. It's zooming it more in this one singular mansion location. It's first person. The goal for Resident Evil 7 is to terrify players again and trap them in this mansion with its... basically a terrifying, unhinged family.
That's so beautiful. I love that it's coming full circle in borrowing from both worlds, that the Japanese title is going to have Resident Evil in it, and that we're finally going to get Biohazard. But now I kind of think that the Japanese title is still better, the Resident Evil. Like, that's such a cool thing to be introduced to.
Well, guys, we're going to play you out with a really creepy reinterpretation of a really old folk song that actually comes from original composer Jean-Jacques Rousseau, was popular as a early American folk song. So they're kind of using that, you know, comfortable backdrop to do something really creepy. It's Go Tell Aunt Rhody from Resident Evil 7. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. This was amazingly fun.
Yeah, guys, like, it was a huge honor to come back, especially for Halloween, to talk to Resident Evil about, talk all things Resident Evil 7 with you guys. Super pumped about it. You know, maybe at some point in the future, you know, Resident Evil 7, real quick, doing my job. It's coming out January 24th for PS4, Xbox One, PC. If you have PlayStation VR on PlayStation 4, you can play the entire game in VR. It's your choice. It's awesome. Terrifying. But maybe, you know, at some point, the series is still going strong, so we'll have more music to talk about in the future. And there's a lot that we didn't cover today.
Well, and I like, this is such a fun Halloween tradition. This is the third time in a row we've had you on for a Halloween. I'm curious, do you guys have any Halloween plans as far as like any costumes or anything that you're planning on doing? Because it's cool, this episode is coming out on Monday on Halloween.
Yeah, you know, we always try to do a good job of sharing all the awesome Resident Evil costumes that our awesome fans have. There's an amazing William Birkin cosplay from New York Comic Con, which people should definitely check out the Resident Evil social channels and stuff. But it's definitely going to be a party for us for Halloween, you know, celebrating in our own little way.
Awesome. Well, it's really the best way to kind of cleanse our palate before we move into Nintendo Month, which will be next week. So next week starts Nintendo Month, which will sound nothing like this episode. So this is just a fun way to kind of to go out of October. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And if you're listening on Monday, have an awesome Halloween night. You know, maybe you'll trick or treat. You know, I'm not going to judge you if our listeners go out trick or treating. You know, you're never too
old. Carl, I think we have some more cool things to plug of ours.
We do. We're really excited. Gamers Rhapsody, at the time of recording, it's about 3 weeks away. And we're really excited. We're going to get to perform this year on November 18th. The Super Mercado Brothers and our honorary fourth Mercado brother, who you can meet if you come to the show. Some of our favorite video game music ever we're going to be playing. We'll also be doing a panel later in the weekend. So definitely come out if you're in the Midwest area. Check out Gamers Rhapsody. It's the third year, and it's going to be a ball.
Yeah, I can't wait for you guys. You guys are, from what I've heard of you guys playing live, I'm really hoping I can make it out. Gamers Rhapsody has always been a blast for video game music fans and just fans of video games alike. So super happy to see that you guys are finally playing it.
Yeah, I mean, the first one that we did, we got to do a panel with you and Emily Reese. It was the three of us,
that was
Carl
great.
Marty and I. And that was such an enjoyable memory. I'm always going to cherish it. So it's so great to have you on the podcast again, Tim, and congratulations again to your new job and your new location, and can't wait to see what comes from you in the future.
Ah, shucks.
We're all incredibly excited to, you know, to see the release of Resident Evil 7, so good luck with all of that. And all right, guys, I think that's about it. We're going to let you go. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Have a great week, everybody.
Peace out.
Tell Aunt Rhody. Go tell Aunt Rhody. that everybody's dead. I was raised in a deep, dark hole, a prisoner with no parole. They locked me up and took my soul. She's done.